All right, we're with Brandon Eich. We're at Splash 2011. Thanks for coming on Channel 9. So, you are, you're the creator of JavaScript. And I saw your keynote today, which was very nice. And you did a long talk about the history and the present and the future. Mm-hmm. I kind of, in this talk with you on Channel 9, want to talk more about the present and the future than just to keep on hashing the past.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
Okay, excellent. I knew you'd appreciate that. So, JavaScript seems to me today to be a relatively mature language that's being used way beyond where you had intended it back in the day when you created it to be a scripting language. It seems like a general purpose programming language.
Yes.
And so the work that you're doing in Harmony, you call, so just kind of give me a little bit of your perspective on that.
Sure. So this happens with all successful languages. They go beyond their original design point. It happens with natural languages and biological systems, which have language analogs. It's successful evolution. And when you get beyond your original design point, you have to consider evolving. Mm. So JavaScript is evolving. It has evolved in a big jump in the late 90s to ES3, and then with ES5 in the last couple of years. Mm. And now we're working on the Harmony agenda, which will show up in ES next, probably ES6, right? Safe bet.
Okay.
But we're not trying to do too much. We're trying to get pieces of user convenience that have already been prototyped out in people's hands, and one or two big heavy hitters like the module system.
Yes. And we, of course, talked to one of the designers of that.
Sam.
Not too long ago. Yeah. Yes.
Right.
Who looks way too young to be a research professor.
Yeah, he's...
But he's one of those students that must have done really, really well.
He looks younger than he is, perhaps.
Fair enough.
I saw him get carted the other night.
That's amazing. So, yeah, the modules sound really interesting. Let me ask you a question about... It seems like you are making this move towards perhaps, and it's kind of ironic since where you started, looking a little bit more like Java. So I see extends, class. What's going on there?
So the class part of the proposals that nominally made our cutoff for the next edition is actually the shakiest part, I have to say, and I've blogged about this. And we do open development. We don't try to game each other or say bad things behind each other's back, because part of the Harmony condition is the committee actually works in good faith on shared values.
Great.
Classes are on the agenda, but the proposal didn't quite make it. Some people want it to be future-proof against more advanced features, like initializing a class instance from a constructor so that you cannot read uninitialized instance variables. You get an error.
Sure.
Other people say, well, you get undefined. That's what happens in JavaScript today. Well, that's fine. And in fact, Dart says that's fine. So we're split on that, and that's making it hard to agree on classes. We've also kind of stripped away some of the things people expect with classes, like private instance variables.
Mm-hmm.
We factored that out into a private names proposal, which has benefit on its own, can even be used from JavaScript today as through an API.
Mm.
But when you want classes, you want a certain sweet spot of sort of well-known convenience. Mm. And it isn't clear to me we've hit that. So I'm open to looking at Dart. I'm open to looking fresh at other ideas, because I don't think classes are where they need to be, and if they aren't, maybe we shouldn't do them, or maybe we can rescue them. But whatever we do, we shouldn't do anything in haste, because it's hard to take back, and we should user test it, and that's part of what we're doing. We always prototype before we standardize.
Excellent. So one of the things, I mean, as you know, I work for Microsoft. I'm a friend of Eric Myers. I've talked a lot. He's been on Channel 9 a lot. And him, and of course, Gilad as well, sort of think of as JavaScript as sort of the WebAssembly or the bytecode of the web. I like WebAssembly better. But that's sort of what Eric will say. How do you feel about that? Like, how does that impact the way you have to continue to design the language to support all these higher level manifestations?
It's more and more of an important goal. It's one of the goals that we started with in 2008 with the Harmony agenda. Over time, it's become more important to me. Now, it doesn't trump user-facing concerns, because JavaScript is and will remain hand-coded by a lot of people. But there are obvious co-generators like the Emscript and LLVM, the JavaScript compiler I demonstrated, doing H.264 in real time in JavaScript. and that's making us, that's improving our type inference JIT. It's also helping us decide what we want to do with typed arrays and binary data, and possibly maybe some local inference for variables that you load from those typed arrays. You don't want to forget that they're integers too. Mm. So we're thinking about how to be a better target for compilers without making the language user hostile.
Absolutely, like adding go-tos and other things.
Call
like
CC,
that.
Right?
Oh,
the functional go-to, right?
Call CC, yeah, exactly.
That's not going to fly. Either it's user hostile and implementers. Some of them can't swallow it. So.
Sure. So, and the other thing that I kind of want to walk to before, I do definitely want to ask you about Dart. I mean, this is Channel 9. We want to have that conversation with you. in some sense, where you were when you originally designed this language. You mentioned even in your keynote today, and of course in your blog posts historically, you created the language for people who weren't programmers. And you added facilities like prototype-based object orientation for people who are a little bit more expert.
Yes.
How do you feel today about that? I mean, is JavaScript still a language for beginners?
I think it is, because you can, by the yard and subset, you can still start writing a little snippet of code that grows to become a program. People worry that as we make the language larger, beginners will be confronted with this thick book and they'll think they have to learn everything at once, but that's not true. And in fact, subsetting is how we learn natural languages. But I do not want the language to grow too large. I do feel strongly that it doesn't have to be like any other language in particular. It has its own destiny. And it's a little bit of a rush job, so it overloads or leans on closures and prototypes heavily. And so people have been very cleverly making patterns to do modules and power constructors, static class variables, all sorts of great things. When you see a pattern, though, I agree with Peter Norvig. He said this years ago when he was at Harlequin. He said, a pattern is telling you there's a bug in your programming language. And if you see a pattern that's used all the time and it's still error-prone and verbose, probably should extend your programming language to encompass it. Guy Steele gave a famous talk at Uppsala in 98 or 99, Growing a Language. He talked about evolving Java, and he started by talking in a subset of English that consisted axiomatically of single-syllable words and a few multi-syllable words he defined.
Okay.
And it was very painful. He did it very carefully. He's a good showman, right?
Yes, he is.
It was like a robot speaking at first, and it was, you were like, wait, there are only one-syllable words. I can barely follow this. It hurts my head. And then as he progressed, he grew the language, and he defined more multiple-syllable words. Why can't JavaScript have a few more polysyllabic words, right?
Yes, absolutely. Now, you also talked about today sort of removing, you know, Crockford's famous for writing the book, like JavaScript, the good parts,
yes,
which is really, really thin, versus the language book.
Flanagan's book has the DOM in it, so it's not fair, but yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, so JavaScript, the bad parts, you're thinking about either removing them or making them hard to use. So talk to me how that might break things.
So with ES5 strict mode, which is something you can opt into, and it's in IE10 platform previews, you don't have with. It's gone. Now, people may say, oh, I love with, I'll never opt into that, but that's a minority position. Most people don't love with, and they know, Doug's taught them, they know to avoid it, they know there are problems there. They see performance penalties just in the modern jitting VMs with with. It turns off optimizations. So with is going bye-bye. Eval has been tamed by ES5 strict mode, and since we're building the next version on strict mode, we're not making a different version or a stricter strict mode or a different mode, we're just trying to step up one level. We can then improve the last big hazard, which allows you to commit typos to your free variable names that end up being a misspelled global variable and they only turn into a runtime error. We can make those compile time errors by removing the global object from the scope chain.
Okay.
So that's coming in the next edition, and that's sort of tied into the module system, lexical scope.
Nice.
That's how we're improving it. We can take things away, like through opt-in, which will be required for strict mode or for the new version, through time passing and people steering away from the bad stuff.
Yes, excellent. Now, of course, JavaScript is a functional programming language.
Some people define that differently, but
some people laugh at that, but I mean, it seems to be the case. I mean,
some people say,
do you think it is?
Only Haskell or languages that are, you know, non-strict and have
purity
have mutation confined to weird corners with monads.
Yeah.
I don't take such a rigid view. JavaScript is certainly full of mutation, and that is. That is one of the areas where even in ES5 we've worked to provide tools to do the other thing, be immutable, freeze things when you need to. Not to freeze the world, but to allow you to control your invariants, to have higher integrity programming. And that's important. So when you start to use JavaScript at scale, even for your own safety, not for security against attackers, but just so you don't step on your own toes, sometimes you do want to say, this is a constant, should never change, or this object is frozen.
Excellent. Now, you know, what about adding types to the language?
Yes, we tried that with ES4, and it's tricky. We were actually doing something we said we wouldn't do, a little bit of research. We thought it was more settled than it was. Maybe it is settled. Gradual typing, what started out being called hybrid type systems, what some people say is optional typing. Mm-hmm. What I've observed with these systems is they tend to fall over into annotating all variables to have type annotations. You end up not having type inference and gradual typing work well together, so you have a type any as a default. And for various reasons, either a stricter mode that warns you or nags you, or some performance folklore, you end up annotating everything. We've seen this with ActionScript and the Flash Player. They they may have steered their developers to do it, but for whatever reason, they over-annotate. So it isn't gradual typing. It's more like, pretty much like typing. And that is not JavaScript. JavaScript will never have mandatory types. So an alternative, which I think Sam Tobin-Hochstadt may have talked about, is based on modules. If you could have a modular approach where you had a static language and it had local type inference, and it was very convenient, it could have commerce with dynamic modules, and you could have good error blame through contracts, a way of higher order wrapping of values passing across the module boundary to point back to the offending dynamic code. That all sounds much better to me, and we're looking into that. But it's beyond the next edition, definitely.
Understood. Now, of course, you know, you mentioned optional type system. Let's talk about Dart. I mean, what are your thoughts on
So I know people, including people at Google, are outraged because it's not really a type system as much as a warning system. And that's okay. It's a design choice. I do think they're working on tools where it would be checked under a slightly different set of rules. And that may make the language fork into two slightly different versions. But other than that, there are things in Dart that I would welcome as inputs into JavaScript or as informative to being a better compiler target language, which is what we talked about earlier. So why not align as much as we can? The thing that we didn't know about Dart anything until the other week, now that we know something, we can work with it, and that's good. Yeah. So I'm open to more inputs like that. When I listed in my talk a bunch of GitHub languages, or a list on GitHub that lists all these languages that compile to JavaScript, Dart was in there, but there's a huge number of them. And to the extent that they get use, we will optimize for them in what we do with JavaScript.
Excellent. So finally, the last question I'd ask you, based on that, I mean, what are some of the challenges with being both a general purpose programming language that spans people who don't know what a closure is to people who think you don't implement closures correctly, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you have that whole, that range. And then, of course, having to be this sort of compiler target.
Yes.
How does that impact the way you guys can move?
It seems a little schizophrenic, and you can't make everyone happy. That's one of the important things to do, as Niklaus Wirth says, knowing when to leave things out. Since we're in an evolving system and we're subject to these evolutionary pressures and opportunities, we are pragmatists. We're realists. We're not going to be the prettiest language. We're going to try to be coherent and avoid making it be a kitchen sink language or a language that sacrifices one interest, like beginners, approachability, for another, like being a compiler target. And I think we can do that. I think the work we've demonstrated so far, especially with the latest high-performance engines, we should not require beginners to consider annotating the types of all variables. That should never be in JavaScript, in my opinion. If you want a typed dialect that's in a module boundary, that's typed JavaScript, that's fine. It's a different language. You have to think about it differently. If you consider Dart with its sort of unsoundness, the covariant generics, where you can have a list of string type variable stored from a value that's a list of numbers, and you may get a warning or you may get an error at runtime, that's not really a type system. That we can argue about that some other time, but to me, that is neither a static type system nor, you know, the full dynamic JavaScript. It's more of a warning system, let's say. And there may be some utility in that, but I suspect, and I've seen this in the Dart runtime code that I've read, that they'll over-annotate. They'll fall into that trap I mentioned earlier of annotating every last thing, and it looks like Java. To me, that's not JavaScript either. So I believe we can steer a course that probably subordinates the compiler target to the usability concerns of human coders, but keeps the compiler target goals satisfied so that the code that's generated is fast enough, and that no one will throw away their compilers and say, I'm going to, you know, download some native code, or I'm going to run something that only runs on certain browsers. JavaScript has the widest reach, so if the performance is within, you know, X percent of native code, doesn't have to be identical to it, that's probably good enough.
So let me ask you this, because I know you must be sort of wake up sometimes and be like, whoa, I can't believe this. I mean, JavaScript is one of the most popular programming languages in the world. There's billions of lines of code out there. It runs the web, definitely on the client side.
Yep.
And now, of course, moving to the server.
Yep.
Who would have thunk, you know, Node.js? But how does that make you feel?
Well, I got over the guilt and shame, my Irish ancestry. I got over that a while ago. The thing that I feel is obligated, I think there's a social good here, actually. People think, oh, wouldn't it be better if we tore it all up and did something else? But the web doesn't work that way. There's too much good sunk cost along with plenty of bad sunk cost, right? The sunk cost fallacy. There's a lot of good in the web, and you will never replace it. So you want to find ways to evolve it. And evolution costs, and it has risks, but I've found that Shortest Path has not painted us into any corners. You know, maybe we'll be like the dinosaurs up a Box Canyon, and then we'll be buried in the mudslide, and our fossils will be found someday, and there'll be, you know, furry mammals in terms of programming languages laughing at JavaScript and those big lumbering JavaScript beasts. Hasn't happened yet.
Excellent. Well, hey, great. Thanks for coming on Channel 9. And great to finally meet you, Brandon.
Good to meet you.
Cheers.
Thanks.